He is the way. Follow him in the land of unlikeness. You will see rare beasts and have unique adventures. He is the truth. Follow him in the kingdom of anxiety. You will come to a great city that has awaited your return for years. He is the life. Love him in the world of the flesh, and at your marriage, all its occasions will dance for joy. So Auden's poem. There are two sorts of Christmas, two dimensions of the Christmas gospel, that of the outside and that of the inside, that of the river and that of the rail, that of Elizabeth and that of Mary, that of John the Baptist and that of Jesus of Nazareth, that of doubt and that of faith. And both are blessed and both are good. At a Christmas party this past week, one of our soon-to-graduate theological students said she would soon be interviewed in the middle of the country by her Board of Ordained Ministry. What will they ask you, we inquired, wondering maybe if they would ask about the synoptic problem or the documentary hypothesis or the second aorist or the teleological suspension of the ethical or the arts of preaching and pastoral care. But she paused and very, very earnestly said, no, first they will ask me, why did you go to Boston University, to study theology? And what will she reply? Maybe her reply will be the Christmas gospel of doubt and faith, and she will reply, I went to Boston because there I can search for truth and affirm grace at the same time. There I can practice the search, including analytical and doubtful criticism for truth, and receive and affirm faith at the same time. I can become human, both of mind and of heart, in that space. The Christmas gospel is of two sorts. First, of doubt. When we listened to the lessons and carols last week, our joyous Christmas celebration here, how wonderful to hear the music, how special to hear the prophecy, say, from Isaiah chapter 9. The lion will lie down with the lamb. They shall not hurt in all my holy hill, saith the Lord. And our tears reflect both the beauty and the absence of that reality. Ours is not a Christmas, but a violent and a greedy and an empty world. We search along the riverbank with John the Baptist and the roiling river of the river, say the River Charles, starting right here at Marsh Chapel. We recognize, we have to, the violence all about us. That is the nature of truth, to be sensitive to and honest about the facts of life and the world around us. We carry an anxiety, some of it, as we've said frequently from this pulpit, is that subconscious anxiety about a world in which what portent there is for the wrong weapon in the wrong hand at the wrong place at the wrong time. And that can make the strongest among us anxious and so overly receptive to a violence, a rhetorical, social, cultural, religious, and political rhetorical violence that bubbles over in public speech that is demagogic, that is belittling, that is bigoted, that sets aside the great traditions of our culture and of our land. Institutions matter. And it's a strange thing to desire to lead an institution on the one hand and mock it with one's rhetoric on the other. No, institutions matter. Process matters. Due process matters greatly. Proven experience matters. Excellent proven experience matters greatly. Institutions matter. And the care and feeding of institutions, anything worthy of the name, marriage, family, church, community, business, company, corporation, country, they require inch by inch, row by row, attention to honesty and health and the development of a reservoir of goodwill. It will be a tragic thing if this generation of 20-somethings takes more than half a lifetime to realize the importance of institutions as apparently have done their parents. The rhetoric around us is not Christmas, but violence. Or think of just this one country in the last year or so. Ferguson, Baltimore, Staten Island, Charleston, Cleveland, Colorado Springs, San Bernardino. How did we become a people 300 million strong with households laden with 300 million guns? Whence our taste? Whence the development of a palate for such violence? Where did it come from? Maybe a little bit at the founding, you could say, at the settlement. Maybe a smidgen at the revolution for those who didn't go north to Canada. No. We don't take it out and look at it. But our predilection to violence comes from another quarter. Racism and gun violence are the same coin. They are two sides of the same coin. Racism and gun violence grew up together. They grew up in the same neighborhood. They grew up on the same street. They grew up playing in the same playground. Racism and gun violence went to the same school. They sat in the same classroom, and they received tutelage from the same teacher. And who is that teacher in the front of the room creating the dark ghosts of racism and gun violence across this country? Why, it is slavery. Forged in the anvil of slavery, 4 million people do not of their own choice stay in irons. For that it takes violence of the whip, of the lash, of the pistol, of the gun, of the hound, of the lynching tree, and worst of all, the violence hidden in policy and procedure from Jim Crow to this day, making the irrational seem somehow reasonable. We benefit from the monument out front to Martin Luther King, but its interpretation requires something of us. Yes, to recognize what has been done, for sure, what has been achieved, for sure, but also, and more so, to recognize that we are not finished. And when we think we're finished, we're really finished. Ours is a violent world at Christmas. Down the Esplanade further, we stop. It's a greedy world, too. We can recognize the multiple appeals to us to buy and the far fewer appeals to us to give. But you know, you only really own what you can give away. You only really possess what you have the liberty to give something else to someone else. You only really have in your possession that which you can offer to others. Somebody is going to come along at some point and endow the deanship of this chapel as a gift, or support the further growth of our musical programs as a gift, or offer as a first set of offerings something to move us forward. The giver is the biggest recipient of benevolence in the gift, and ours all around us has become a heavily and mercantile materialist world. We recognize the needs for sharing and so on, but at Christmas, we also see where we have come. It's almost as if the symbols of Christianity, as Vahanian wondered 50 years ago, have grown cold to the culture around us. The star and the angel and the shepherd and the king and the straw. Ours is a world of buying and of selling. Ours is also a world of emptiness. My friend, perhaps sitting alone in the hatch shell, feeling the emptiness of a world that has seen in the last several years the loss of his family members, the loss of his spouse, maybe along with him you feel that too, an emptiness that seems unabated. As in Frost's cry, when to the heart of man was it ever less than a treason to go with the drift of things, to yield with a grace to reason, to bow and accept the end of a love or a season? No. We know what John the Baptist is teaching us out along the river, that prophetic voice, that voice of doubt, that searching, searing light, keeping us on the ground with Luke, who would want us to embed ourselves in the history of our own time. No? Christmas brings a certain doubt, and yet, kind sir, as you pause along the river in the shimmering darkness, as you recognize honestly what is before us, is there, may I ask, not just a little smidgen of faith trailing your doubt as well? There in the moonlight along the river, is there not a luminous, numinous, a bit of spirit, of presence, of mystery, a little bit of faith to season your doubt? For the Christmas gospel is not only that of John the Baptist, it's also that of Jesus, not only that of Elizabeth, but also that of Mary, not only that of the river and the search for truth, but also that of the rail and the affirmation of faith. We can pause right here inside now for a minute to recognize, come Christmas, the gifts of grace, beginning with the gospel according to St. Luke and his measured, historical, wonderful account of the birth of the Christ child. At Christmas time, more than any other, especially upon Christmas Eve, over years and decades, we can testify. We see women and men in the dark, in the nave, with the candle, singing the carol, and recognizing at some visceral level the world does not lack for wonders, but only for a sense of wonder. Learning begins at root in a sense of wonder at all that has been given. So here at Marsh Chapel in these years, while we have long had a strong Holy Week, Good Friday, and Easter, we are now growing and continuing to grow in Christmas and Christmas Eve. This is not only to expand and grow the congregation. It's also, and more so, to give us a balance, a theological, spiritual balance. The church told two stories about Jesus. The first, the most primitive, the story of his death, crucifixion, and resurrection. The more important, no question. And that is Holy Week, and that is Good Friday, and that is Easter. But very quickly, the church added a second story, that of Jesus and his life and his birth, his nativity, his growth, his teaching, preaching, and healing, and parables, and miracles, and all. You need both of those wings to fly, both the primitive early first story of his death and the second narrative of his life. That's what brings wonder to life, wonder in the heart of the Gospel of Luke. We pause along the rail also to listen again to Micah ben Imlah. Wonder can be found even in the midst of emptiness. Care can be found even in a mercantile and materialist time. Care that is expressed in your own life and in the shepherding life of this community. Care in listening. Care in visitation. Care in response. Care in presence, care that Micah the prophet would know as he admonished us, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with thy God, to have a heart. This is for all the lonely people thinking the world has passed them by. Don't give up until you've drunk from the silver cup. You never know until you try. There is a care, and you're living it, salt and light, that resists the heavy wind of greed all around us. And stopping finally along the rail at the epistle to the Hebrews, we shall recognize also, and maybe more so, that the violence of our time has, as the champion of the one, the Prince of Peace, our Lord, whose coming and whose presence guides us into the things that make for peace. We shall resolve this Christmas. We know Whittier's complaint that, and then in grief I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. We know that, but we also know the presence of Christ teaching us in community, covenant and by example, that we individually and collectively will resist the urge to strike or strike first or to throw a first punch, that we as individuals and a collective will resist the temptation to act unilaterally, that we as individuals and a collective will resist, develop that spiritual resistance, as Niebuhr called it, against the capacity to love things and use people when our calling is to love people and to use things. And we will develop individually and as a collective a capacity to see and to foresee and to plan and to make space for the life of faith in wonder and in care and in peacemaking itself. This is the gift of Christmas, the gift of faith. But should you be more inclined to the indoor and then the outdoor, and more to light than darkness, and more to the cradle than to the roiling river, maybe we would notice that even the strongest faith benefits from the little smidgen, the little trail of doubt following, to give salt, to make sure that your faith does not curdle into blind faith, that your faith does not curdle into fideism. People of faith, this Christmas season, the gospel comes in two sorts, that of the river and that of the rail, that of Elizabeth and that of Mary, that of John the Baptist, that of Jesus, that of doubt and the search for truth, and that of grace and the affirmation of faith. And both are blessed, happy, and good. For he is the way. Follow him in the land of unlikeness. You will see rare beasts and have unique adventures. He is the truth. Seek him in the kingdom of anxiety. You will come to a great city that has awaited your return for years. He is the life. Love him in the world of the flesh. And at your marriage, all its occasions will dance, will dance, will dance for joy.